don't you love me? To a ragtime.
Here's an idea. Instead of wasting our tax money on Wall Street slicks and don't use it to help.
Goodbye, my baby. Don't you cry, my baby. Sleepy time is nigh. Won't you rock me to a ragtime love?
This is WHFR Dearborn. Time now for our public affairs show. Every week, Fridays from 1 to 2 p.m., the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Because it's another edition, it's a new show, that's why we call it the new WHFR Journal. Local news and views from Dearborn and the surrounding area. Hi, my name is Jay Koronik. I'm one of your hosts for today, and with me today is our WHFR News Director, Susan Morrell.
Hello, Jay. So nice to be here.
You
in
think?
The wonderful state of Michigan. And we have our very own bailout problems right here in Metro Detroit.
Thank you so much for introducing our first topic. Yes. What I've done is I've gathered a number of different opinions from national sources. In fact, one is an international source through the internet, because the weekly papers, the Press and Guide and Times Herald, can't cover these things on a daily basis. They are weekly papers. No doubt they'll have some reflections about these things next week. I am certainly waiting, and I certainly hope that Frank Bewick can get back to writing his column for the Times Herald. He had a stay in the hospital, as we announced a couple weeks ago, and we hope that he's home now and recovering quickly, so he can get that typewriter or that word processor spinning again to find out what he thinks about these issues. But today in the New York Times, this is a headline story in the New York Times this morning, first page. Chances dwindle on bailout plan for automakers. The prospect of a government rescue for the foundering, that means they're not doing well, American automakers dwindled Thursday as Democratic congressional leaders conceded that they would face potentially insurmountable Republican opposition during a lame duck session next week. In other words, a lot of the Republicans who were defeated are still in office. And by golly, they're not going to vote for this for one reason or another. And we can look into one of the reasons, which I thought was interesting at least, even though I wasn't personally in agreement with it, in just a few moments that I happened to pull from the internet. But that's the simple fact, folks, is that even if the Democrats collectively and President-elect Obama wants to do a bailout, whether or not that's the right thing to do, they're not going to get their way, it looks like, because even though Republicans jumped into bailing out Wall Street with the Democrats, too, let's not forget, they both did that, $700 billion, you all remember that, and you know how well that's worked out so far, $300 billion already spent, almost, you might say, down the drain, because nothing has turned around, things have only gotten worse, and we're not going to do fear and trembling here on this show, we'll leave that to Fox News, they do it so well. By the way, my favorite gloom and doom and Armageddon is going to come tomorrow, host Glenn Beck. Now, Susan, you've listened and watched the Glenn Beck show on CNN Headline News.
I love Glenn Beck.
Yeah, have you noticed he hasn't been on?
Yes, he's going to Fox.
That's right, yeah. And actually, he's on some sort of personal speaking tour right now that was planned, you know, in months ahead. And so that's another reason you might say that he's not on the air right now. Maybe he planned to have this little time to make extra bucks for himself in advance. But yeah, he's going to be on Fox News Channel, where he probably belongs.
Where, I mean, starting tomorrow?
No, next in January.
In January. But in January, my question to you is, do you happen to know the reason why he switched from CNN?
Probably more money. That's why people usually do that. But I would say, you know, he has gone over the edge at times. I mean, he said Armageddon was, I mean, he was not even from a Christian point of view, but that, you know, Iran was going to have nuclear arms by now, and they were going to be attacking Iraq, and they're the worst evil in the world. And I mean, he was Mr. Gloom and Doom. I liked his independent spirit, and several of his editorials were interesting on television. But as I told you, I listened online to some of his radio shows. He's a morning radio DJ on some syndicated shows across the country. I don't think in Detroit. Out of control madman.
Well,
really, not just gloom and doom and fear mongering, but just absolutely most unverifiable kinds of statements. And his two co-hosts have to, like, talk him down. You know, talk about giving some balance to what he was saying. Now, on the air, he was reading a script. And so CNN might have had some trouble. I don't know the background. Might have had some trouble with him and told him to tone things down.
I have a different take on him. I really think that a lot of things that he says and does are purely for entertainment purposes. And I mean, he kind of has a lot of antics, and he tries to be a little bit funny, sort of a dark humor there. But I thought he was pretty down on Obama when Obama was running.
Yeah.
And I don't think that CNN liked that, perhaps.
Right. Yeah, it was definitely the unfair sort of thing to do. But why not go with the other people who were acting unfair, you know, and pushing rumors about his being a Muslim and so on? You know, right in cahoots, right there on Fox News Channel. So it, I guess it's really where he belongs. But, of course, they get more viewers than any other cable TV news channel. So he's probably making more money, too.
Yeah,
so.
But keep in mind that Glenn Beck was also against this bailout. He was against it.
Yes, yes.
He was against it. So
right.
I don't know.
He has, as Bill O'Reilly, who was on John Daly's the Comedy Central Daily Show last night, O'Reilly and John Stewart, you know, on the same show, very different opinions, and they were sparring back and forth. They only do a 10-minute segment, you know, so you can't really get in depth on much. But you know, it's always interesting to see the sparks fly there. But as John Stewart said, he said, "Bill, I do respect you. You're not an ideologue." In other words, he's sort of all over the place.
Yeah, but what
but what that means is he's not necessarily always right-wing conservative, that sometimes he does support some liberal things. Sometimes he's an independent. And Glenn Beck frequently was like libertarian independent.
Right, and that's what I liked about him, because he had some really interesting guests on there who had more independent views, and he talked a lot about the economy.
But his own editorial conclusions were usually very fear-mongering, we're all going to die tomorrow, or something like that. And I can't respect someone that jumps to those kinds of horrendous conclusions. And maybe it was like a stunt. As he said, he's just a recovering alcoholic former rock and roll DJ who doesn't really know anything. So why should we? And he calls himself, in fact, on the air, a self-deprecating humor, a clown.
Well,
so why should we listen to a clown? I mean, I at least have two master's degrees. not in politics, but I have been involved in politics for years and years, way beyond Glenn Beck. And so I have more credentials, not that anybody should listen to me and remember any of the opinions of this hour are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College folks. But, you know, I'm just saying is that he really doesn't have any credentials to be a pundit.
No,
he doesn't. He tries to read. He's self-taught. But it doesn't mean he knows the larger background and context of history and so on, except what people happen to tell him, some of the guests on his show, and they're all got their own points of view. And so he has not been educated in the wide-ranging spectrum of ideas, which would be called a liberal education. And that's true, probably, I have to assume, of Sean Hannity and a few of the others that are on Fox News.
But Glenn Beck also calls himself white trash. So that just, yeah, I mean, well, you know, these are antics. These are antics for entertainment.
Yes, I know. So it looks like that that they're not going to get the help for the auto industry through Democratic leaders. This is from the New York Times article from today, too. Have been calling for a package that would include help for the auto companies as well as new spending on public works projects. And this is what Ralph Nader said. It's make work projects. If a lot of people are out of work, you find public projects that the government funds to get people jobs temporarily, to get money coming into their families. In fact, that way we get stuff done. It's not just street sweeping, but a lot of things that need to be done for the city and the state and the country. This way we can get things. It's not just welfare, you know, where you just give people money, basically, for not working, that when they said, what are you going to do with all the GM workers if GM goes out of business? And Ralph said, public works. And here, and I mentioned last week, too, that a editorial writer in the Wall Street Journal said the same thing. Let rich people buy out GM, turn it around, and in the short term, get public works projects going. So,
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're talking about the bailout for GM. So part of the bailout,
well, all the auto industry, in fact,
was supposed to be part of that. Was supposed to be a public works program.
No. The Democrats are suggesting that as additional bailout money, and somebody said it would be a total like $50 billion in addition to the $25 billion to all three auto companies, which is already in place, but it's only supposed to go for R&D, research and development on hybrids and electric cars. So that can't go to their debt, to their loans, to helping workers. So the Democrats, and I just saw that figure somewhere, for about $50 billion, are thinking of a number of different kinds of things, including an extension of unemployment benefits, increased food stamps, and aid to states for rising Medicaid expenses. You know, that would help everybody. But none of that, it looks like, is going to go through because the Republicans who are there, and including of course, lame duck Republicans, are not going to go along with it. So there you go.
Well, I hate to say this, but I'm not totally in favor of the bailout.
Yeah. Interesting conclusion here. And again, folks, we're talking about the bailout only for the U.S. auto industry, which is primarily just the three big car companies. Did you know there's more than just the three big car companies in the U.S.? There's a few auto companies. Some of them are making electric cars. Yeah. And some of them are making hybrids. Very small numbers. Or some are making exotic cars that cost, $200,000 or $300,000. But that's not, I mean, in a way, what about the fairness here? Why just save the big companies? Why not all the little companies?
In fact,
why not all the companies that there are?
That's my exact point. Yeah. Why has Toyota been successful and the big three have not been successful? I mean, we are rewarding failure in the marketplace.
Yeah.
If we do that.
Yeah, well, certainly fairness hasn't played a part in it. Maybe you could say, well, it couldn't. There's not enough money there. But at the conclusion of this article from the New York Times today, it says, as the outlook for an auto bailout dimmed, President Bush, remember him? Our current president, traveled to Wall Street yesterday where he gave a robust defense of capitalism and seemed to warn world leaders and the incoming Obama administration not to draw the wrong lessons from the crisis by overregulating markets and hindering free trade. So now we know why he got us into this trouble in the first place. He doesn't learn, he doesn't read, he doesn't know, and he doesn't learn.
But what does he think are the lessons that we should learn? What are the lessons we should learn?
Well, I don't know. He was in favor of the bailout too, right? which is all the socialism and all the $700 billion. I mean, so he can't say he's in favor of free trade. Now, of course, you know, over-regulation, there wasn't any regulation in effect in the areas where there should have been regulation, and that's one of the things that got us into this mess. So who knows? But that's his final parting statements. You know, everything he did was totally right. Everything is totally good. And even though there's a mess in the world, in the whole world, including two wars that we're in now, and one of which had no basis in reality to go into at all, and even with the bad economic times, don't overregulate and don't hinder free trade. Such as NAFTA and all these other free trade agreements, you know, that even was McCain in favor of them? I mean, Obama certainly was against them, and we'll see what happens once he gets in office, okay? So, and here's a point from another story from yesterday, New York Times on their business page, and it's just from Michelle Maynard, but it's basically a story. Is bankruptcy so bad? GM, for example, who is apparently closest to bankruptcy, and they're the company that's most low on cash. See, Chrysler, we understand, even though they're a private company, they've got billions and billions in reserve money, even more than Ford. They could actually, you know, wait longer before they have to decide on some desperate actions than even Ford. But even Ford has got some nice reserves right now. It'll take them to another year or two, and they got some new cars coming down the pike, as I said, from their European factories that are already making them, that people might really want to buy in a year or two. Right now, nobody's got any money to buy. But GM, they're the closest, actually, to bankruptcy. But what is bankruptcy? Well, it says here from the New York Times business page, not everyone agrees that GM filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy would be the disaster that many fear. Some experts note that while bankruptcy would be painful, it might be preferable to a government bailout that might only delay at considerable cost the wrenching but necessary steps GM needs to take to become a stronger, leaner company. Although GM's labor contracts would be at risk of termination in a bankruptcy, setting up a potential confrontation with its unions, the company says its pension obligations are largely funded for its 500,000 retirees and their spouses.
They're funded?
Yeah, they're already funded.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what about the health care benefits?
Well, no, that's totally different. That's for the, yeah. But their pension obligations are already sort of secure. They're in place. It's just their everyday operating costs. Shareholders have already lost much of the equity that they would see disappear in a bankruptcy anyway. So if their stock is worth nothing, who cares if they go bankrupt and their stock's worth nothing? It's they've already lost it, right? GM shares have fallen 90.5%.
Oh my gosh!
In the past 21 months.
Oh,
talk
ouch,
about
ouch.
Talk about losing the money you've got invested. If you had all GM shares, it's now down to about 9% of what it used to be a year ago.
Well, they're dead. Come on, they're dead in the water.
Their shareholders are in trouble. And of course, car sales are down and so on. And as companies in industry like airline, steel, and retailing have shown, bankruptcy can offer a fresh start with a more competitive cost structure to preserve a future for the workers who remain.
Yes.
And we know that Northwest Airlines right here in Detroit, they went through bankruptcy proceedings. They're doing okay. Delta, of course, was bought out by Northwest. Who was it? United Airlines, I think. Didn't they go through bankruptcy, too?
Didn't Delta buy Northwest? Or which
well,
way
vice
is
versa.
Yeah.
They merged anyway. They merged. Right, yeah. Uh-huh.
But maybe they need a new CEO at GM.
And so Pershing Square Capital, which is a company that has an activist investor by the name of William Ackman, Tuesday, he said that GM should consider bankruptcy. He said, if he knows anything, the way to solve that problem is not to lend more money to GM. And he said that in an interview with Charlie Rose on Public Broadcasting. That's that late-night interviewer, Charlie Rose.
Yeah.
Instead, he said GM should submit a prepackaged bankruptcy, laying out steps it planned to enact once in Chapter 11 protection. Not surprisingly, Rick Wagoner, who Ralph Nader dissed in his statement that we played last week as sounding good, but all totally on the wrong track for GM. Of course, Wagner disagrees. He told investors last week that, quote, the consequences of bankruptcy would be dire and extend far beyond the company. And he said that GM will, quote, take every action we possibly can to avoid it, unquote. But it's not the end of everything. As a lot of big companies know, it's an interesting excuse to...
I think they need a new CEO.
A new direction.
I think they need a new CEO. Rick Wagner should go. And I think they should go into bankruptcy. I don't think they should get a bailout. And I think we should have a public works program for all of the workers in the United States. Well, that's my
analysis. And you're known to be a progressive, of course, but one of those anti-business progressives. Here's David Brooks, who is a frequent commentator on public broadcasting on the evenings. He's a Republican. He's a conservative. But he calls it the bailout to nowhere, too. And again, we're just talking about the auto industry here. He said, not so long ago, corporate giants with names like Pan Am, ITT, and Montgomery Ward. Remember Montgomery Ward in Dearborn?
Oh, yeah, what happened to them?
He said, they roamed the earth. They faded and were replaced by companies with names like Microsoft, Southwest Airlines, and Target. The U.S. became famous for this pattern of decay and new growth. Over time, the U.S. government built a bigger safety net so workers could survive the vicissitudes of this creative destruction. But the government has generally not interfered with the dynamic process itself, which is the source of the country's prosperity. Yeah, if a company is doing bad things, selling products that aren't as good, another company is on the right track, well, they'll become dominant. And the other company may go out of business or just become secondary or third or whatever until they catch on. That is the essence of capitalism, whether we like it or not, is that people are bound to get hurt if they're not creative and if they're not responsive to the public, not just going for the big bucks every minute. They've got to keep their company leading edge, cutting edge in terms of their products and services, too.
Well, if Toyota can do it, GM can do it.
But he says, well, apparently it's about to change. Democrats from Barack Obama to Nancy Pelosi want to grant immortality to General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler. They've decided to follow, and here he talks about that extra $50 billion. And this is before, you know, it looks like yesterday it's not going to happen. He said that this endeavor is a different sort of endeavor than the bailout of Wall Street. He says that money was used to save the financial system itself. Granting immortality to the big three does not enhance creative destruction. It retards it. It crosses a bright line, a line in the sand, if you. It is not about saving a system. There will still be cars made and sold in America, but maybe they'll be from Toyota or other foreign companies that know how to build the kind of cars that we need
Toyota,
now.
Toyota, Honda, Nissan.
Right, yeah, they all have factories here. BMW has a factory here, you know, in South Carolina, I believe. It's about saving politically powerful corporations. There is already a long line of lobbyists bidding for federal money. If Detroit gets money, then everyone would have a case. Are the employees of Circuit City, which are out of bankrupt now, or going into bankruptcy now anyway, or the newspaper industry inferior to the employees of Chrysler? It is all a reminder, he says, this is David Brooks from the New York Times, that the biggest threat to a healthy economy is not the socialist of campaign lore. It's CEOs, crony capitalists, who use their influence to create a stagnant corporate welfare state. So it's kind of interesting here. We got a Republican, a conservative Republican, who's against the bailout, as are many progressive liberals like Ralph Nader.
And me.
And Susan Morrell. Okay. And it's a very interesting thing, is that this may not be the best thing to do, even though the mainstream Democrats, President-elect Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and other Democratic leaders, and John Dingell, who, by the way, I heard this today. In fact, I've got it in the end of the article here. In fact, is it that article or another one? John Dingell is criticized. I don't have the article with me. As he was on the right track. He's always been 100% supporter of whatever the auto industry wanted. And, of course, right now he wants the bailout money for GM. But, you know, he fought against pollution controls for a while. He fought against higher standards for auto economy, you know, miles per gallon, because the big three didn't want it. Well, of course, that was the wrong thing to do. If they would have been forced into electric cars or higher MPG, they would have been better off today.
Well, no kidding. I mean, Ted Turner was on CNN this week, and they were talking to him about the bailout for GM. He is totally against it. He says he knew they were going down the wrong road 10 years ago. I mean, they're making all these dinosaur cars that are gas guzzlers. I mean these things are antiquated. They should be off the road immediately.
With all due respect to John Dingell, because he's done so much for the community here, and he was reelected by a big margin, and we all love John Dingell for many reasons. I love him because it's in the back burner of his mind, but his dad was one of the first people in 1948 who was in Congress that proposed universal single-payer health care. And John has always said, well, you know, I'm for that too, but it's just not practical now. And he's sort of given up on it, but he used to give at least lip service to what his dad set up, and I think it would be a great upheaval in the okay, in the health system, but it would get us on the right track and would save everybody money and save our government tons of money in the future. But anyway, John Dingell, he's in a power struggle today, maybe we'll know by later today or by Monday, with Henry Waxman in the House for leadership of the committee, and it's a committee that does have to do with the economy. I can't remember the title of it, but he's been the chairperson of it because of his seniority for years and years. And now Waxman is confronting him on that because Waxman wants to do things differently with the auto industry. And, well, of course, Dingell would be against that. And as the chairperson, he can deny the bill even gets introduced or even discussed, you know, in the committee. So there's an effort by the lead Democrats in the House to actually get Dingell out of that committee chairmanship. So at least, at the very least, it's not anti-Dingell, let's get these bills introduced and discussed and have hearings on them. Not just, you know, well, Detroit automakers don't want them, so they're not even going to be talked about.
Well, I agree. So, I mean, it's time for change. This is what Obama campaigned on. Yeah. The word of the moment is change. And certainly the big three need to change and get on the right track. I agree.
I do love many of the things that John Dingell has done, a long, wonderful, wonderful career. And his dad was on the right track with universal single-payer health care, too. And John Dingell, you know, has been in the forefront of, just to end this and with some sort of balance about him, environmental concerns because of Michigan being a outdoor state and a hunting state. We want to preserve fresh air, clean water. And Dingell's at the forefront of campaigning for that. But right now, as the chairman of this one economic committee, he has been, pardon me, use an auto industry or automobile metaphor, a roadblock to some of the bills that I think would have forced Detroit to go the right direction right. over the years. And these bills need to have a full discussion and hearing and have us make an intelligent decision starting in January. So maybe he should take it easy on this one committee and allow somebody else to be chair. But I know
I think
that's what
the American people want. They voted for change in this election. They voted for Barack Obama. And sometimes when you have leaders in positions of control and power and the industry needs drastic change, you have to change the leadership. Otherwise, you cannot go in a fresh new direction with good, fresh ideas.
And I'm sorry to say is that most of the incumbents, Republicans and Democrats, were reelected. So what do we have in Congress? Yes, we have a new president. But the people that pass the laws are pretty much the same people. So if you blame the Democrats, guess what? Most of those Democrats, those people, those individuals are still there. If you blame the Republicans for the mess we're in, most of those Republicans are still there. Now, I'm using that as a segue to my last point about the bailout stories, and then we'll get on to some other WHFR issues. And I've got Jim Hightower's comment about public works coming up. A little 2-minute statement from our progressive commentator, Jim Hightower here. I got this as a from a public affairs, a PR firm, an email about the auto industry bailout. And I had to do some research here. This public affairs firm is in Alexandria, Virginia, and it talks about Congressman John Hostetler. And he made some comments that are against the bailout of the auto industry. Now, but they didn't say, as clever PR people, who the heck he is. Is he Republican or a Democrat? Well, I found out he's not even in Congress anymore. But, you know, the honorary thing to do is, like, even George W. Bush, he'll still be referred to as President Bush, even when he's out of office. It's an honorary term. We still talk about President Clinton as President Clinton, even though we know he's not president. So Congressman John Hostetler, I found out that he's a former, and I don't know if he was just kicked out or whether he left in 2006 when a lot of Republicans were kicked out by Democrats being elected, but he's a former Republican from Indiana to Congress. And he, first of all, I guess I should mention that he is one of the 8 Republicans in October of 2002 that voted against the resolution to give President Bush power to go to war in Iraq.
Oh, well, that's a surprise.
So he might have been kicked out because his own party said, well, you're not in favor of President Bush, so we don't even want you to run again. Maybe they put another Republican who was pro-Bush in there. Who knows what the story is? But he was one of only 8 to vote against that. And his new book, which, guess what, he couldn't find a publisher for.
Well, but, is that a surprise?
So he had to start his own publishing company, and the book is called Nothing for the Nation, Who Got What Out of Iraq? So it is anti-Bush. It is anti-Republican. It is anti the common basis for why we went into Iraq. And he admits he wasn't even a genius, you know, but he could see through the so-called intelligence or lack of intelligence of the Bush administration, as I could. I hate to say this, folks, I was going with UN investigative teams, you know, the teams that were searching for the weapons of mass destruction for 5 years and already found nothing. And the heads of those teams said, look, we've looked and looked, there's nothing. What do you mean there's something? There's nothing. And of course they were right, and I was right, sorry to say. And Representative Hostetler, who's not even, as he admitted, a genius on this, that he could see that the information was flawed coming from our own intelligence agencies. And so he's got a very interesting book, but he has to publish it himself. And you might have to look up him on the website, which I don't have. But his last name is Hostetler, Hostetler. Here's what he says about the auto industry. And apparently was on yesterday's Politico.com stories, which aren't there today. I checked on it. So Politico.com, by the way, is a very Republican conservative website. Just so you know, Politico.com, very Republican, very conservative. But somehow Hostetler got his comment there because he's against the bailout. And here's what he says. Last comment on this issue for today's show. It's not so much a bailout of the auto industry. It's a bailout of the United Auto Workers. Oh, my gosh. And because, remember, I said it is. It's not just GM, but they want money to keep the auto workers employed or pay for some of their benefits or pay for unemployment compensation or whatever, short term at least. He says it's not that the big three cannot build world-class automobiles and compete in the global market. Oh, no, no. Well, why haven't they then? Okay. He says it's that their unsustainable labor and retirement costs, and we just read that other article. He's wrong about this, isn't it? The retirement costs are already covered. They got a fund. They got the money set aside. That's already covered. That's not the issue. The fact is they can't sell cars that they're making.
I don't think it's a labor issue. I think it's a leadership issue and what the product. It's a product issue.
Right. He says President Bush shouldn't yield to this, and we should stand firm in his opposition to picking winners and losers in the auto industry. And he says the Republican Party should stay as far away from the issue as possible. And so he thinks it's a pro-labor union. Well, I think it's pro-worker. You know, everybody talks about trickle-down not working, and trickle-up has to be the place to go. So it's interesting that there's so many people, conservatives and progressives, that agree. And I know there's a lot of maybe United Auto Worker people listening. And my dad was in the UAW with Chrysler. And I love unions. Okay.
I love unions.
Some of them maybe have not looked to the future for future employment. They look for short-term, maybe economic gains. You know, you get a slight raise in your paycheck, but you're not helping the company look to the future. And the future of your employees is not just retirement or buyouts, but the future of your employees is actually the future of the company, too. But, you know, I know unions will say, hey, they won't let us talk about corporate goals when we negotiate. It's true, they won't. Even here at Henry Ford Community College, when the teachers' union, I love them, they were good to me, Local 1650, when they negotiate for a new contract, they're not allowed to talk about goals for the college. I mean, they're not. And so if they think that the college administration is going the wrong direction, they can't do anything about it, unfortunately, in negotiations. It's not the place, according to, you know, employee teacher unions. You can't, like a shareholder could, and of course, university doesn't have shareholders. We've got taxpayers, of course, but we don't have shareholders. And even the shareholders of GM have all been out, Ford and Chrysler too. Well, Chrysler doesn't have shareholders now, for easy, quick profits. But even, you know, when Michael Moore did his documentary in 1992, about trying to get in touch with the head of GM. Smith was his last name.
Okay. Roger Smith.
Yeah. And the title of the movie was Searching for Roger or something?
Roger and Me.
Roger and Me. He was trying, but the whole premise was he was trying as a person, an average person, to get to Roger Smith and say, why are you firing all these people in Flint? Why are you being so nasty to them? Isn't there something you can do for them other than just firing them with no concern for humanity whatsoever? Finally, he gets, I think, in a shareholder meeting, somebody got him in with credentials for a second, and he got, I don't know, 10 seconds to ask a question, which Smith finally didn't really answer directly, but that was the end of the movie. Go take a look at that. Rent that DVD. Roger and Me, it's entitled, Michael Moore. That's the problem, that the shareholders, other than Moore's effort, weren't asking the right questions either. They were just demanding profit, 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 not, hey, GM, guess what? You're going in the wrong direction. Why did you kill those electric cars in the 90s? The shareholders should have been very, very upset and should have demanded that question be resolved. But, short-term profit, that's all we want.
No, but not only that, Jay, and this is something that I addressed to Ralph Nader when we interviewed with him, when he was talking about the GM, was that a lot of these big three are already making fuel-efficient vehicles, and they're selling them in other countries. They have They have cars that are much more developed, so they have the technology. They're just not using it here in the good old U.S. of A. I mean, they're crying wolf. They have the technology. So, I mean, I don't think that's a totally legitimate gripe.
Yeah, I don't understand why it's going to take Ford 2 years to get the cars they're making in Europe over here. But I understand they got to retool. They got to change the machines on the assembly line. They have to get the distribution channels going. But at least Ford has already clearly said, we're bringing those good cars. I mean, good handling, good performing, good fuel economy cars that they're making, that they've made for years in England and Europe, in Spain with the Fiesta, back to the U.S., but it's going to take a couple of years to get them here. So at least they've announced they're on the right track. The trouble with GM, and my problem with GM, they haven't even announced they're on the right track with anything.
Well,
you know,
it's leadership.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's listen to the public works issue to bring this to a small closure and some other public service announcements right now here on the new WHFR Journal, Friday, November 14th. Jay Koronick and Susan Morrell with you, and we'll be back with local, very, very local Dearborn stories. Auto industry is certainly local after the comments from Jim Hightower and a couple of other PSAs here.
Here's an idea. Instead of wasting our tax money on Wall Street slicks who don't use it to help anyone but themselves, why don't we use our public funds to build something in America? Like what? Like bridges that are in disrepair, schools and libraries that need upgrades and expansion, high-speed rail networks to connect our population centers, energy-saving technologies for every home and building, public transportation for all of our cities, state-of-the-art internet systems everywhere, and public park repairs and expansions. America has important work that needs to be done. America also has millions of workers who need good jobs. Let's combine the two needs so we can lift our country up and move forward together. There is no better time than today to launch a major public works program. That's not a quote from some lefty do-gooder, but from the head of the National Association of Business. Corporate executives are now joining labor leaders, mayors, and other progressives who see the urgent need to invest in and rebuild America, creating new infrastructure and new middle-class opportunities all across our land. George W. and his gang of laissez-faire ideologues oppose this. They assert that such a bold national undertaking would take too long to help with the current financial collapse. Hello, George. State and city transportation officials say they could have 3,000 highway projects and $8 billion worth of mass transit projects underway in less than 90 days. Let's get the money to them. This is not a time for more ideological claptrap from right-wing theorists. It's a time to restore America's can-do spirit, turning our grassroots people loose to build. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is not something that should wait until next January. Congress should come together now, this very month, and begin to move money where it'll do some real good for everyone in America.
The Henry Ford Community College Theater for Young Audiences program presents Wisdom and Wonder, Tales from Ancient Greece, November 14th through December 7th. Join an ancient Greek family at dinner as the children hear myths retold through live reenactment, music, and dance. Filled with special effects and lots of facts about Greek culture, religion, and mythology from Greece's golden age. Performances are Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, November 14th through December 7th. Call for more information, 313-845-9817. 313-845-9817 for reservations and further information. Or visit www.hfcctheater.org. hfcctheater.org.
That's going to be a wonderful, wonderful experience on the live on the Henry Ford Community College Adria Auditorium stage. And it starts Fridays tonight at 7 p.m., Saturdays at 2 and 7, and Sundays at 2 o'clock, all the way through December 7th, including the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, too, I believe. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Read the words in front of you, Koronek. There are no performances on Thanksgiving weekend. But other than that, that's 2 weeks away, folks. Okay, yep, 2 weeks. Only 2 weeks. Other than that, let's tell you the tickets are $12 for adults, $10 for college and high school students with ID card, and $6 for students under 12 and under. And if you want reservations, as it said there, 313-845-9817. You might want a group, because a group of 10 or more are only $5 a seat. So again, the reservation number for the play Wisdom and Wonder, Tales from Ancient Greece, which is the basis for all of our civilization. What we know as democracy, even though it was just rich white men that could get together and vote, not the women and so on, but still, not the slaves, but still, it was something. That was where the basis of our American political system came from. Ancient Greece, folks.
The great philosophers.
Oh, that too, yes.
Aristotle.
Course. Socrates. Plato. And there was a few others in there. Okay.
Right.
Take a philosophy class here, folks. Okay. And I also wanted to mention that it's full of detail in Greek culture and family, and punctuated with gorgeous special effects. There's some dancing and music, but not singing, interestingly. But anyway, it's entertaining and educational, and it focuses on the theme of action and consequences. And it's appropriate for children age 6 to 14. Or children over 14, probably, too. So it's a great sort of thing to do with the family. And we do encourage you to maybe call ahead and reserve the space. Again, it's $12 per person for adults, $10 for college and high school students with ID, and $6 for people 12 and under, groups of 10 or more, or $5 a seat. Can two or three people sit in one seat? No, I don't think so.
Not advisable.
So, but it's still, that's a great cost. Not much more than a big time commercial movie and a live theatrical play. And they're really gung ho on this. Our promotions coordinator Caroline is in the play as part of is helping with that. And so it's really, really going to be a great theatrical experience, directed and designed by Jerry Jablinski, who we've had on this show many, many times. Original score is written by one of our HFCC adjunct faculty, Anthony Lay, also. So that's even better. A lot of local people doing it, and it's going to be a great experience. It's called, I know it's not a title you might remember because it's not a play that's been on Broadway or something, but it's entitled Wisdom and Wonder, Tales from Ancient Greece, November 14th, tonight, starting tonight at 7 p.m., 7 p.m., not 8, okay? If you're worried about it getting dark earlier, you'll be out of there within, probably by 9 o'clock, certainly. So maybe they did that for the young people. So appropriate for children ages 6 to 14 and, of course, adults. Wisdom and Wonder here at HFCC Adria Auditorium. The number, one last time, 313-845-9817 for reservations. There you go. Okay, so over to you, Susan. The big cultural event tonight is?
Yes, we also have a very interesting event tonight presented by the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra. The concert is called Heroic Journeys, and it will be tonight, Friday, November 14th at 8 p.m. at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center right here in Dearborn on Michigan Avenue. And it's going to be a very interesting concert featuring Benjamin Beelman on the violin and his sister, Elizabeth Beelman, on the viola. And they are going to perform Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante for violin and viola, and Beethoven's Symphony No. 3, Eroica. And the tickets are $30 for adults, students $10. You may call 313-565-2424 for additional information, or go to the website at dearbornsymphony.org.
That's Mozart.
Mozart.
Yeah, we got letter on that a few years ago. Somebody was very, very upset. And no disrespect to Amadeus Mozart. There is a T that is not silent, that is not even written there in the spelling of his last name, and it is pronounced Mozart. We do know that, folks. And just, you know, so don't get your pens and paper going like crazy there and think that just because we're a college station, we don't know Mozart.
Well, I usually
slip of the tongue there.
I usually call him Amadeus.
Sure, just Ami, you know, just
Amadeus.
Yeah, how you doing, Ami? Yeah. Okay.
So he's a very fun.
And that's a great movie, a very interesting movie too, with a fellow that grew up locally, actually lived in Plymouth, Michigan for a while in the lead role. The movie, the musical, Amadeus.
Amadeus, that's what I refer to. Yep. Oh, it's a wonderful movie.
Yeah.
So he had a great life.
Well, yeah, although he might have been killed by somebody else at the end, but other than that abrupt end.
Obviously a great talent. A great genius.
Well, genius, yeah, not just talent, yeah. Right. We know that. And so go support the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra in the beautiful Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. That is tonight at 7 p.m. I believe this is their last concert until February. And so, although there's some other Dearborn symphonic events, like the Nutcracker is coming at the end of the month, and the Dearborn Symphony is playing in that local production of Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker, and that's always sort of a cultural tradition here in Dearborn to have the DSO, as we call it, the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra, and have a live stage performance of the Nutcracker.
But it is interesting that they have the brother and sister together, one on the violin and the sister on the viola together in concert. It's kind of exciting.
And you're totally sure it's brother and sister?
Well, that's what it says.
Oh, that's good.
Benjamin okay. Beelman and Elizabeth Beelman.
And they look very young compared to me, and so good for them. They're probably up-and-coming, rising talents, maybe geniuses themselves. So it's quite a diverse number of pieces, and one of them, Dancing on Vesuvius, which sounds like it could be dangerous, that is was composed locally.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. And so, again, giving some attention to local musicians and local talent. It'd be a tough choice tonight, folks, but a couple of great things to do in the Dearborn area if you're within the sound of my voice, as they say, or you want to fly in on a plane if you're listening on the internet, whfr.fm, is the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. That does start at 8 o'clock tonight. And so we're not recommending you go to Wisdom and Wonder and leave at the intermission and make it over to the DSO. But the DSO is the only time you're going to get a chance to experience that. That's tonight, one performance only of those selections. And if you want more information, although I called and there was no one there, the DSO office is 565-2424. There may be someone there now. Often there is in the later afternoon on the Friday of the performance. Or, of course, just look up the number of the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. You can find that if you go to the website, to cityofdearborn.org. It's actually cityofdearborn.org, and you'll see the Ford Community link, Ford Community Center link, and you can click on that and find out more about tonight's event of the DSO. Okay, a couple things are happening. And you, of course, who formerly was the host of the show Pet Lovers Lane, Susan Morrell, and that show is on hiatus right now as one of our Saturday morning forum shows, and we hope it can return soon.
Yes.
But there's a couple of
returning soon
local events tomorrow here in the Dearborn area. So tell us about those.
Yes, the Dearborn Animal Shelter, which I'm very partial to. They're my favorite shelter in Michigan, and they're right here in Dearborn. And tomorrow, November 15th, they're going to be hosting their first session of Cat College. Do you believe that? Cat College. It's a free...
I thought cats were smart enough.
Well, they are, but people...
This is for people.
This is for people.
It's not for the cats.
The cats have already graduated.
I think the cats are teaching people here tomorrow.
Exactly. It's a free...
Now tell us what's really happening.
It's a free seminar. Free is good. And it's going to help people understand their cat behaviors, their kitty cats' behaviors, and allow human beings, that's people, that's us, to live together in harmony. And it's presented by Dr. Carrie Krause, who is a graduate of Michigan State University's College of Veterinary Medicine. She's the guest speaker. And she started doing formal behavior counseling of pets in 1999. And she started her own practice of veterinary behavioral counseling service. And it's called Great Lakes Veterinary Behavior Consultants, and she works with dog and cat behavior issues. And the class will be held at the Dearborn Animal Shelters Center, which is located next to Pet Supplies Plus at 2621 South Telegraph Road in Dearborn, and it will begin at 11 a.m. and it'll run for an hour. Let me just say one thing about behavior issues for pets. That's the number one reason people end up getting rid of pets. They adopt them from shelters, or they buy a pet, and they are unable to control the behavior of the pet, and they end up giving away the pet because they can't figure out how to handle it. And that almost happened to me with Mitzi, who I adopted actually from the Dearborn Animal Shelter.
Mitzi's a cat.
Mitzi was a kitten. She was only like 2 or 3 months old. We adopted her, and unfortunately, she had food poisoning, which we didn't know. Okay, so she had an illness. But in addition to that, she had behavior issues, and she was very, very like overly aggressive as a kitten, majorly overly aggressive. But we kind of struggled with it, and over the years, she's mellowed out. She's older now. She's probably 4 years old now. But, I mean, I really had to dedicate much of my time and energy to training her and getting her to calm down. Of course, I understand if you have food poisoning, you might not feel too well.
Now, we will say here that even though you did get Mitzi from the Dearborn Animal Shelter, is
right.
that correct? They do have very good veterinarians that help them, and they try to diagnose any problems with the pets that come there, that show up there, and or dropped off there, and they look for the things like aggressive behavior and so on. It sometimes is difficult to tell in the short term, but they're probably one of the best run veterinary facilities, shelters that in the area in terms of good management. You can pretty much trust that maybe your odds are better in getting a very desirable, appropriate pet for yourself there than maybe even at some commercial pet centers, certainly, and maybe even other than other shelters. So I do want to say that I think you can, and you did, you trusted them as much as possible. I know you made many calls back. You told me all the stories about Mitzi and that, and they did try to help you and come up with answers for you, too, even after the fact. And what was, you still have Mitzi
well,
or not?
Well, I do have her, and truthfully, despite the fact that I went through a lot of trouble with Mitzi, I wouldn't have traded her for anything because she is so entertaining. She has just got the most unique personality, and she's very, very lovable. And the house would be much too quiet without her. So I'm very thankful that I have her. And
so Mitzi, if you're listening, we love you.
We love you, Mitzi.
Okay, yeah.
So in addition...
So Cat College, what time
Cat
tomorrow?
College at 11 a.m., and I should go to that.
Yeah.
I should go because I need to go to Cat College,
and
too.
And where? It's not going to be at the Dearborn Animal Shelter.
No, it's not at the shelter. Okay. It's at 2621 South Telegraph Road in Dearborn, right next to Pet Supplies Plus. And also, they are having another event at the same location. The Dearborn Animal Shelter is going to be hosting a low-cost microchip clinic from 12 noon until 2 p.m. And I took all my cats over there to be microchipped. It's wonderful. It's reasonable. It's only $25. Mm-hmm. It's very worthwhile. They give you papers. Then you have papers. It's official. And they are also having an adoption event from 11 o'clock until 3 p.m. And mm-hmm. the shelter is overflowing with cats and kittens. They reduce their adoption cost by 50%, only $45 for a kitten of 4 months old, and only $40 for an older kitten. And I have adopted an older cat. Honey is an older cat, and I adopted her, and she was just wonderful. But there's an adoption package that goes with it. It includes vaccinations, leukemia testing, worming, spaying or neutering, microchip ID, a transport box, a kitty cushion, and a training and a DVD. It's an estimated value of $250. So it's well worth it. And you can give them a call at 313-943-2697. And it's a wonderful place. Elaine Green is the executive director, and she is just the top person in the whole state, in my view, in terms of helping animals.
Just a final plug, it's a volunteer group, folks, Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter, that were formed, I think this is their 15th year of running it, under contract from the city of Dearborn. This is an example of outsourcing, if you will, that really works. And so, I mean, they try to pay. I mean, Elaine Green gets a salary, of course, but they have a lot of fundraising activities, which are very successful. So thank you to all the listeners that have been supporting them. And very, very worthy cause. Think of it, too, if you don't have money enough to go out much and spend much money on things, and you say, well, there's nothing to do if we stay at home. Yes, there is. Play with a pet.
They're so entertaining.
Give a home to a pet, and
they
it
are
also
so entertaining. It,
again, if they're if your behavior is appropriate, and you know how to adjust to another personality in the house, it can be a great learning experience for somewhat older children too, to learn how to care for and show love and affection for another creature. It can rub off on their. The way that they treat other human beings too, which it should, and so as a parent, you really deserve to appropriately choose a pet at a certain stage of development for your family too, and the cost is relatively low, even the ongoing cost for pet food, and in this case, kitty litter, and the shelter will help you with that, and so this is. They're using they're actually at Pet Supply Plus,
right next door.
Right next door, anyway.
Next door to Pet Supply Plus.
2621 South Telegraph.
Right,
and it starts tomorrow at 11 a.m. And that's the Cat College, and the microchip clinic is at 12 noon, and the adoptions go until 3 o'clock at that facility.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll probably adopt another cat if I go.
let me have the intermodal.
The intermodal?
Yeah, story. I think we mentioned this a couple weeks ago. Just to keep informed about things happening in Dearborn, folks, this is an evening event. Ooh, out for the evening at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. But to find out about something that might happen here in Dearborn, and maybe you'd want to help support it. In fact, Mayor O'Reilly is going to be there. Now, it starts at 4:30. Mayor O'Reilly is going to make a presentation starting at 5 p.m. this coming Tuesday, November 18th. It's an open house. Everybody's invited to hear a presentation on an intermodal rail passenger facility. What this means is that it's a multi-year study, and you're going to be hearing the final results about the proposed station. And it'll be on Michigan Avenue, right? It'll be an expansion of the rail station, the Amtrak station, which is located, you might say, behind or just east of the Dearborn Police Station and the court facility there on Michigan Avenue south of Greenfield. And just west of Greenfield, Michigan Avenue west of Greenfield. And there'll be a question and answer session after the presentation about the final study. And free refreshments, light refreshments, they say, folks, are going to be served. And so we're not saying the homeless should go there to have a free meal. But how to use the land, there would be multiple partners here. But it means that, yes, you might have a way to spend the day in Ann Arbor, maybe shop there without using your car, or maybe find new ways to commute to work and get to meet the mayor, even if you haven't met him before in person. And hear his he's got a 45-minute presentation that he's going to make starting at 5 p.m. But the whole affair is from 4:30 to 7:30 this coming Tuesday, November 18th. Again, be very interesting to find out what's going on. That could really help be a central focus for Dearborn in the whole western suburbs. Bring a lot of business here, as well as help those of us who don't want to maybe drive to work or drive to shopping. So that's something that even I think I might attend. So, oh my gosh. This is the new WHFR Journal, the station making waves, coming up in just 2 minutes now. We've got to conclude quickly here with our show for today. Thank you, Susan Morrell, for being with us. There's a couple of new programs on CDTV, that is community television, that are produced by the city of Dearborn that are in rotation, and we can't go into the exact hours that they're going to be on. But tell us the channels and tell us the two new shows that are starting to run where people can just watch their Comcast or WOW television cable and find out more about Dearborn. What are the two new shows that are in rotation?
Yes, the two new shows, CDTV is Channel 12 on Comcast and Channel 10 on WOW Internet Cable. The first program is the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce's recent Economic Outlook Breakfast, where Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. will serve as a special guest speaker. And, you know, it's going to air pretty much every day throughout the week, different times. So check on that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the second program is the annual meeting of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. It's called the CRC. It's a privately funded nonprofit research organization which studies issues of interest, such as funding challenges facing Michigan's local governments. Mm-hmm. And then that will also air throughout the week, and check your local listings.
Yeah, those may seem a little dull, but I mean, you actually want to find out what's going on. Got to get involved. It's a new world out there, folks, and you can't just sit back and count the dollars and spend the money. It's now a time to get involved and let your opinions be known too. And this is these couple of shows, as well as this event next Tuesday live at the Ford Center at 4:30, starting at 4:30, is ways to find out what's happening. So thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal from the station making waves. Stay tuned for Joanne Korchinska and Highway 61, the best in blues. And we'll be back again next Friday with you, at least yours truly will. And as I said, thank you, Susan Morrell, for being with me.
Thank you, Jay.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and let's keep stirring things up.